Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. It is an awesome day in Ohio. I hope everyone who is supposed to turn their clocks. I didn't this morning.
Oh, and so how exciting.
And was scuttling around, and I had an extra hour. The universe gave me an extra hour. I had everything ready an hour before. It was an awesome feeling.
That is kind of a magical gift to suddenly have an extra hour of time. When we have Jill join us, we're having Jill Mattson as our amazing guest today. And I can't wait to ask her when we do get her here what the ancients would have thought of daylight savings time.
We have waited a year to have Jill on this show about her new book, The Lost Waves of Time, and she's going to even answer audience questions. She's promised to talk to us about music and sound and how it's been used for good and evil down through the ages in many cultures. She's a favorite guest. She's very prolific with what she creates, painting and music and lecturing. And if you've ever met Jill, She looks like a little sprite. She's very tiny, and she has this wonderful little glow in her eyes, like something magical is going to happen. So I'm looking forward to hearing from her and the new book. I can't wait. I know I have to, and I did read it when it first started, when it was about 300 pages, but I guess it's about 600 pages now. I don't even have a copy, so I want to know more about it, but we will be with her in a minute, and then we'll learn about how she tapped into ancient mysteries. But we have some modern announcements to do first. So, Richard, do you have any announcements for the day?
Well, first, for those that are listening on Blog Talk Radio, that I'll let everybody know that if you want to see what we're going to be talking about, because sometimes Sherry will put up websites or pages, you can also go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and click on Blog Talk Radio, and then you'll be able to see a link to join the web feed where there's a chat over there as well, so you'll be able to see what Sherry's doing. I still like the audio at Blog Talk Radio myself at the 347, you can call in at 347-850-1407, or on that same page, there's also a link to join the web part of Blog Talk Radio where you can have chat is there as well. And yes, I did have an announcement.
I forgot to say all that good stuff we're supposed to say up front.
And who's our sponsor this week?
The Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, and we are sponsoring a class. We do have three matching scholarships. It's going to be on Alzheimer's and brain plasticity, neuroplasticity. The review class, the free one, is the end of the week on the 5th and 6th. So that's open to the public, including your software. We're going to give you the software. So if you know of anybody who wants to know more about Alzheimer's or neuroplasticity, please let them know. Post this on your YouTube or Twitter or wherever. We want to reach as many people as possible, and I will tell you why in just a few minutes in my announcement. So, Richard,
I do have one announcement, and I will try and keep a smooth, calm voice. I'll try and stick to my radio voice, although I really want to get on my, you know, soapbox and be ranting about this. Texas, the headline is, Texas orders health clinics to turn over patient data. A, really? And this has to do with Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced his decision to end Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood in the state. Really? So investigators showed up at the clinic and demanded that they turn over documents, including patient records, and how that's even possible since there's this new federal law about patient records supposed to be kept private. So I'm curious about how the state of Texas has decided they have more power. And this is all related to some issues that came up regarding abortions. And, of course, in my opinion, we know that there's a big push to try and make that, you know, we're back in Roe versus Wade land of conversation of women's rights and their bodies. And it just blows my mind. And you can insert all of the expletives that you might be able to think of for me. This just blows my mind. This is including patient and medical records that they are demanding.
What part of the government is demanding it? The governor's office?
The state, the governor.
Oh,
3 days, the governor announced, and then state health department investigators showed up on Thursday. I'm reading directly from the article in the New York Times. I'll post this link in both chats. Investigators showed up on the day at Planned Parenthood in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and Brownsville with orders to turn over thousands of patients of documents, including patients' records and employees' home addresses and telephone numbers. Really? Really? How is this possible? I have no words. I'll just put it in.
Next thing going to happen is they're going to put a list in the newspaper of who visited the clinic.
Yeah, with pictures.
Oh, I'm disgusted.
Yep. Okay, that's my announcement.
I have a happy note.
Excellent.
And then I have a really, really sad, sad note. This is my happy note. Edward Snowden has been exonerated, at least by the European Parliament. They voted to offer Edward Snowden. He's the one that put out all the records that were supposedly top secret about Hillary manipulating the kings and presidents of different countries. To offer Edward Snowden asylum and protection and drop all criminal charges against him, when at one time most of the world was bullied by the U.S. government into pressing charges against Snowden and forcing him into exile. The entire European continent has now officially given him a pass. I think that's incredible.
Wow. If I had a sound effect for applause, I'd put it in right there. That's great.
Well, it's going to come for Julian Assange and the other people. The people in power are trying to keep the truth from the people. It goes on to say, the final resolution mentioned that too little has been done to safeguard citizens' fundamental rights following revelations of electronic mass surveillance. He's the one that brought all of that out, and people who are watching us on WebEx, I have put the link in chat and the article. This came out not in the U.S. newspaper, but in the Australian channel for Nexus Magazine, which they have given us our own channel, and we will be posting our things there about how we were shut down from helping people with Ebola and a lot of other things. I did not post this one. This was by John Dibes, and he's an author, researcher, investigative journalist, so go check this out. Also, the Nexus channels are great. My next announcement, I talked about that a bit, the free class, public class coming up on the 4th and 5th, but there is something much more important. Richard, the keynote that we always do, and I probably have gotten 10, not more than 20, calls or emails this week about, my energy is so low, what can I do? Well, folks, if you would check the keynote, you would see that right around now, magnesium, which is an incredible part of giving you energy and helping your heart rate, is in stress. Have you had energy issues? Richard, hip issues, energy issues?
I've had some hip issues, but I had a couple of days of just, I couldn't believe how tired I was, and I bet if I sat down I would nap, but I stand all day because I have a standing workstation for my computer. So I stand all day, and the great thing about standing is it's really hard to fall asleep while you're standing. But I bet if I sat down, I would have nodded right out, which is very unlike me. So, and I did have, not unlike yourself, I had everybody that I talked to was like, I'm so tired, what's wrong? I can't believe it, I'm so tired. So it's, once again, the keynote, amazing. I can hear Jill giggling about the keynote.
Well, here's something that's coming up next week. Epstein-Barr, Genome and Pathogen is going to be very lively. So it's going to get worse, folks. Depend on your blood type and go back and eat what's good for you for the week. I'm an A type, so I need a lot of vegetables, some fruits except strawberries. So go back and look at that. But I want to read something else, and I'm doing this at the sacrifice of some time with Jill. So I'm hoping we will go over because I think this is an incredibly important piece of information that I've stumbled upon, and I'm just going to read it. It's a personal note from me, and it is on our keynote, which is under In the News on our Sound Health Options site. The survival traits of the animals on the planet, man included, equal greed and power. In the animal world, the leader, the strongest, the wiliest, gets the healthiest mates, the best meals, the power position. Are the humans better than this? Or does it seem that we have slipped back into our animal ancestry? Our need for money, which warrants prestige and position, has transformed into a sophisticated economic system. Our need for power, dictating who makes the rules we must live by, is now based on strength and position and has transmuted into a two-sided court system decreeing who can claim dominion. And all of it has morphed into a two-party political system. 4% of the U.S. adult population claim attorney as a profession, yet 41% of the U.S. Congress are lawyers. No wonder the system has moved into the two divergent directions. As a group, historically, we have only been attacked on one side at a time. Today, we are being attacked economically, as wages increase slightly but prices soar. Our rights guaranteed by the Constitution are slipping away into oblivion, and you just heard Richard talk about it. They're taking medical records now. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, how many of us have it? And I wrote this 5 minutes before we went on the air, so I see some typos, and I will fix them. Personally, I'm afraid of the many government agencies that claim the right to close my business and personally jail me for the slights they perceive. Now we have new insidious attacks coming on. Big Pharma is in cahoots with Wall Street speculators who have begun to use the need for medications against us. Recently, an unscrupulous financial speculator bought the rights to a life-saving medication for AIDS patients and changed its price from $13.50 per pill to $750 per pill. Likely 99% of U.S. citizens could not afford such gouging. What a brilliant move by the combined armies of Big Pharma and Big Government and Big Economy. Raise the prices so that a person must choose between a quality life and a life of obedience. Dictated too about our rights and privileges of being U.S. citizens. Choose to die or comply. The scourge is upon us. Whoever controls health controls the quality of life. Let it be the people. I recently looked at a medication, Benicar. The woman had run out. She called us. She needed more. And nobody could help her. Nobody would give her the pills. It's blood pressure medication. She didn't want to go without. We don't do that kind of thing, but this seemed an emergency. So we went to the pharmacy, and they said she couldn't have it because her insurance had an order, and the order hadn't arrived to her yet and wasn't due to arrive until next Thursday, but she was out of pills. They wanted $412 for her to pay for this subscription herself. That's ridiculous, since she had been paying something like $45 all along for it. Not a copay, but she'd been paying the whole thing. I called a friend in Canada, and they got the medication for $64 over the counter and sent it in and helped out. But why is it costing $412 in the U.S. and $64 in Canada? And the answer is Wall Street has bought the rights to distribute medication and to price gouge because of it. And I will guarantee, well, I think 99.9%, this is what's going to happen. When you cannot afford your medication, they're going to say, if you'll give us your gun, we'll give you the medication. If you'll take these immunizations, we'll give you the medication. If you promise not to protest against us, if you promise to vote Democrat or Republic or whatever side they're on, if you guarantee us all of your medical rights, if you give us your firstborn, we will give you your medication and allow you to live. And that's my very tall soapbox for the morning. Comments, Richard?
Wow. We better get Jelly here pretty soon. This is wow. I would refer, based on what you just said, I would refer everybody to the movie THX 1138, which was actually George Lucas's first film when he was a student at UCLA. It's really THX 1138.
Okay.
I'll put it in both chats. Because it really is, I mean, it's spooky.
Well, this is
I'll just go with spooky.
We have been doing these free classes. People can't ask for anything cheaper, but it's an incredible amount of information and software and support that people get. We're trying to put all of this back in the hands of the people so we aren't tied up by these self-interest groups. Well, I hope Jill's going to talk to us about how the ancients used music to control people, because I think they're using money now, but I think they used music in the beginning. So can you introduce Jill?
I would be delighted. Jill Mattson is an accomplished artist, musician, lecturer, and author. She's a recording artist with numerous CDs using ancient and modern sound healing techniques. Jill has authored several sound healing books and lectures throughout the United States on the topic of sound, spirit, and matter. She draws on her extensive research of modern sound healing and 20 years of study of antiquities and social societies to show the incredible power and healing capabilities of sound. To crack ancient subtle energy secrets hidden in front of our noses as music, one needs to understand numerology, music, quantum physics, altered states of consciousness, psychic abilities, and more. Without this broad background, it is too easy to conclude ancient people were primitive and superstitious. Jill has the broad understanding necessary to crack the code of ancient musical secrets. Jill is joining us to talk about her newest book, Lost Waves of Time, The Untold Story of How Music Shaped Our World. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, and thank you for such a lovely introduction. How kind of you. Thank you.
You deserve it. We love you.
We love you.
I'll keep paying you to say that.
I want to ask a question. I want to ask a question that we've had you on a number of times before, but I don't know that I've ever asked this. Was there an incident or a something that started you on the journey of looking into the, you know, to dive into the ancients? Was there some an aha moment?
Yes.
Was there, what was that?
Yes. Well, my middle son won a contest. It was a publicity thing. When he was 8, he's now 30, over 30. But anyway, he got to go see Bill Gates. And, of course, he could care less about that. But he got a new computer, and we got a ton of publicity for him winning this contest. His essay that he had to write at school was Imagine the Magic of a Computer. And he had, I had just had a new baby who had colic. And my two older boys watched the younger boy when I was doing dishes. And they didn't like that. So Lee's essay was to throw baby brother in the playpen and do the computer to make holograms so that the baby thinks mom's nearby. And then all good little boys get to go off and play computer games. Anyway, that was his winning essay, and it got a lot of attention. And at that time, I would say I was very sincerely into Christianity in the very conservative interpretation. And I took that idea, and I applied it to the Bible. I decided that just for fun, I was going to write God's autobiography, and he was going to be a computer game player, a maker, and he was be playing a computer game like my kids did, and the stories in the Bible would be animated role, you know, where you get a guy and you do their life and you see how far they can evolve, etc., in a computer game. And as I did that, I started through the Old Testament, and I just decided, oh my gosh, God has PMS. I mean, you know, he would be one thing at one moment, and another chapter, he could be terrible. There's some things in the Bible kind of nestled away that are pretty shocking about God that are, you know, like he wants them to kill them all, not just some of them. And anyway, I decided, well, there's got to be another Bible. So I went and was looking for the Serpentine Bible, and then I got into the Kabbalah, and then I got into the Essene or John the Baptist Mystery School, and John the Beloved Mystery School, excuse me. Anyway, my quest kind of morphed to what is the most beautiful, wonderful God I can even conceptualize for however grand or beautiful that is, reflects on who am I. In other words, if my God gets a stick out and beats you, what am I going to behave like? Get a stick out and beat someone. So I started then on this quest, and I started in the Kabbalah, and that led me to the Sumerian, this Zoroastrian stuff, and I'm a musician. And when I started, you know, the hair on my back, I was like a little porcupine. Whenever I saw something about sound and music, and I'd just write it down. And 20-some years ago, after I went through the whole globe, almost every mystery school that I could get my hands on, maybe close to 30 of them, I have stacks of information. And I just had to read stuff so many times. Like, here's an example. I remember the first time I read the papyri, the Hermetic magic papyri from Egypt. They had this cure for a cracked skull. And it was to put an ostrich egg near the patient who had a cracked skull. First read, I'm thinking, oh, what are these guys smoking? And then, you know, by the time I read it two or three times and went around the globe, I realized that, and actually Sherry helped me, because Sherry can hear subtle sounds coming from 2D shapes. She can recognize the sound of a Templar cross. And it started dawning on me that when you read antiquity, there's energy emitted from architecture and from 2D shapes and 3D objects based on simply vibrating energy in a certain shape pattern. And so what they were doing is that they were using quantum energy. They were using perhaps dark matter, we don't know. And putting it in ancient terms, they were using chi or prana, subtle tiny things of energy that represented the shape of a healthy skull. And they were simply doing resonance and transferring the frequency pattern of a perfect egg shape. And then I had the aha moment. And that's how it was. But like, and then I noted, like, earlier in the Egyptian stuff, their practice was, like, somebody's sick, doctor comes out, and says, yeah, you live, no, you don't. And it reminded me of, you know, Auschwitz, when there would be an officer there saying, okay, to the right or the left, and one meant life and one meant death. But what it meant is that hermetic magic and a lot of what they're doing in antiquity was using quantum energy, dark energy. I guess we really don't know. But they're using infinitesimal small energy that's very malleable. And then they're putting it in perfect creation, and then they just mass enough volume until it forms in matter. And that's kind of like the secret recipe. So the Egyptian who's looking at a man deciding whether he lives or dies, all he's trying to decide is, will he live long enough to ingest what we have to offer? And that's kind of how it was. It's like, that's why it took me 25, 30 years. It's like you go through once and you don't understand it, but then maybe the ancient Lao Tzu might explain, you know, how you use sound to manipulate and control your population's behavior. And then you hear it, see a reference to that in the Druids, but they don't explain it too well. And so I think by doing the whole globe, I got it, if that makes any sense.
It does. And do you think part of it was that when we used to gather in circles around the fire after the meal and tell stories, do you think that it was just because it was passed on that way, that for, until we got smart enough to print books or I'm not sure what, that was just passed on as a given, that sound and the relationship to nature and what you heard in nature and when somebody got sick? I mean, every movie ever where you have any ancient culture, somebody's sick, there's always somebody, a figure, often in feathers or animal skins or something, over somebody else, burning something and what looks to be like chanting. And was that just because that was just part of the world? That was just like we would consider today having a cell phone was part of the world. It's a bad metaphor, I'm sorry.
But it was more than that, because every culture attributed in part the sinking of Atlantis to sound. Now, it doesn't really matter whether someone believed in Atlantis or whether it sunk. Every culture believed that. Therefore, they realized how powerful a an energy you can easily manipulate, how it could be used for evil. So it was only the shamans in the tribe that had the info. And they only got passed on, sometimes only through death, to the next shaman. Or in the mystery schools, they would have like a pecking order, you know, like a initiate, disciple, adept master or something. But kind of like, think of like, you know, low man on the totem pole, supervisor, manager, CEO kind of a thing. And in order to move up the pecking order, you had to prove your honesty and integrity and your psychic abilities, because they believed that if you came in really empowered with psychic abilities, you had them from your last life, and you were pretty, you had to prove yourself and be powerful to get those skills in the first place. And so they were secrets, and they were carefully guarded, often verbally, not so much as to withhold the blessing, but as to withhold the curse if someone misused.
And I do
have an idea too, when you're ready, on Sherry's comment, whenever you think that might be good.
Okay, let me just toss one more thing in there, then I'll have you make that comment.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of one of the great sorcerers, one of the great cinematic sorcerers, Mickey Mouse, in Fantasia,
mm-hmm.
it was one of the best. It was like, yes, it was a child's story, but it was an amazing thing. When we think back about what you're saying about the showing of the, you know, Mickey thought he was ready. I never knew Mickey's gender. Mickey wasn't ready really for the power and lost control. and mm-hmm. the sorcerer came in and, like, met, you know, clicked and, you know, snapped it out. And that just seems like a great cinematic reference for exactly what you're talking about. His character
right.
was the sorcerer's apprentices of, you know, okay,
right.
I'm ready, but no, wait, you're not really, and then it got out of control.
Right. And back to Sherry's idea about the animals, about being greed and being on the top of the pack. If you have energy to change your life with malleable energy, like sounds, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to bless other people and yourself? Or are you going to use them? So there it's at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a question from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's totally bizarre, but I understand why they're asking it. Are we being manipulated by sound, by harp, and is sound and music related in this way?
I do not know an affirmative answer on that. I have no proof. I have suspicions. If any organization is trying to control people, why wouldn't they put out, and they would control your brain waves or your health and so forth, and you all understand that that can be done. I have no proof, but it's, I don't know, it's crossed my mind.
I would think I would have to use the phrase, goes the pattern.
Okay.
Well, there's another question that goes right along with this. Has there ever been a time in history or any society where those in control restricted people's access to sound and music?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, every society almost. Like, I remember it was maybe about 10 years back, one of the popes had passed, and they had these little guys with these long sticks and all these kind of bells. Well, that would have been an ancient healing code that they would use in church but wouldn't allow people to use at home. And then, for example, in the ancient Chinese, they would create beautiful cords, and it was very important in their vast district, you know, because I guess if you're traveling on foot or whatever transport they had, China would be a pretty big territory, that every town had to tune to the same music. Again, no band up the street, no radios, no internet. So everybody had to bring in their flutes, and they measured them. So the A in my flute would be the same as your flute, so we'd all tune alike. And then they would also have this practice where they'd make beautiful chords, harmonic chords, peaceful chords. And they would have different groups of the population harmonize, like feel love and blessing and powerful and strong, and then harmonize a tone, like to empower it. And then the whole China would then create this great harmony. And of course, the root tone, the most important tone, was always restricted for the emperor. And, you know, you got the more important harmonic tones based on your status. And even, like, how many musicians you could have in your court, because musician in these ancient times was equated with power. So depending on how high you are up in the Chinese government on the pecking ladder, depended on how many musicians you were allowed. And they had this throwback idea from Atlantis that it wasn't just the pitches, harmony, meaning intervals, two notes played at once, rhythms or harmonics, which would be after ripple of a note, but it was also the angle at which the musician stood. Like if you were a singer, it would be like your mouth's a water pistol. And they would aim you, so that your sound created like sacred geometry shapes or shapes found in nature, which they felt healed them, harmonized them, and empowered them. And all that was controlled. You had to be pretty high up the food chain to get the best sounds. And I find that globally.
Wow. I don't think you've seen this book yet, have you, Richard? So we're both just...
I got a backstage copy.
How's the book organized? All this information you're talking about, is all of it in the book, and how's it organized so people can learn more?
Well, I started with a theory coming from antiquity and perhaps built up by myself, that answers your earlier open statements. So perhaps I should get into that. And then after we talk about how subtle energy is used throughout time, then I go per civilization, like here's the sound, music, and how it's used. Here's the secrets from Atlantis, perhaps the mother lode, Lemuria. And then what I think happened was when I do believe Atlantis sunk, and they had 12 tribes, each having psychic skills, healing methods, you know, like the Indians with their dream catchers, the Chinese with balance and feng shui, the, you know, I mean, every hermetic magic going to the Druids and the Egyptians. So they all had their specialties. But when you go back to Atlantis, to me, it was really powerful because they were all there and they were interused. Anyway, and then I go through ancient China, Egypt, India, Greece. We see the Middle Ages, Dark Ages, and right up to present. And so I'm looking at the music secrets, and also number patterns under the music. Like, it's hard to imagine because today you listen to anything you want. You know, you get on a piano, you can play in any key you want, but that's not so just 300 years ago. 300 years ago, the scale, the musical scale everyone listened to, if you graphed the numbers of the cycles per second creating the scale, created a Fibonacci spiral. I mean, it was sacred geometry. And so anyway, you can look at number patterns under the music, and they unfolded sequentially. I don't know if I'm making that clear, but it's almost like someone, something, or biology or something inspired musicians or people to take music that evolved in a sequential, logical, step-by-step process. Said differently, and I'm going to equate to colors, sound to colors, like Sherry does, because it's so much easier to understand when you talk about colors. So thinking that if you count the cycles per second of red light and take it down octaves, you get a musical note C, and you can do that for each musical note on your piano. So it was like... you know, there was music of C, which would vibrate your emotions and your thoughts and create action-oriented or health issues with perhaps circulatory. And this I learned from Sherry, all this from Sherry. And then, you know, the next big culture comes out with orange as their primary musical mode. And again, you can't go from key signature to key signature. You listen to what's available. And it's all controlled. So you have whole epics based on orange, Hinduism, the Dalai Lamas. And then you go for yellow, and then you can just go across the globe and see. It's like we had playgrounds to learn all the emotions and physicality associated with red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, blue, violet. So we learned all the musical lessons of the rainbow, all of the emotions possible in our world, all of the physical issues in our world, and we get opportunities to master them. And then we ascend and graduate with a degree in white light, which includes mastery of all the component colors, pitches, matter. And in a way, Sherry, that gets me back to your opening comments. There was, and these things, again, I found throughout many societies in the antiquity, I think Rumi reflects it, Rudolf Steiner from a spinoff of the Theosophy. They talk about energy as organized and conscious, and that it has to step down, slow down, to be in our world, to participate in a dimension which is such a slow-moving, dense energy field, such as Earth. And they suggest that soul, or consciousness, I should say, inhabits a rock, a plant, an animal. And I don't know, I'm very blessed with psychic skills, and I can communicate with animals and plants. And also rocks, for that matter. They're like big computers. So there is conscious energy. I know that. And what they're saying is that you each have a soul. So like a soul of, all the daisies could have like a group soul. All of the Cocker Spaniels could have like a group soul. And just like in our earth, people start out fairly young, and then you get those that mature and kind of raise the energy, and then they're ready for the next step. That's an ancient idea of getting into matter, saying that each classification has skills and abilities, and they get challenged, and if they can take the next step, they move the next step up. And then I'm just going to tell a story from Donna Eden. She's an energy healer who can see like you can hear. And she said that like in the 20s, 30s, most people were radiating the fundamental, or their fundamental color mostly was green in the United States. And during this time, you have the United States gets rich, you know, because abundance and is one of those issues. And we get rich, Coke and General Motors and Ford and Kodak, companies start, and then our final exam to master, our final chance to master abundance is lack. And the final exam being the depression. And people did recover from that. And then she said that most people were radiating the color, the soul color of blue, particularly women. Big families, spare the rod, spoil the child, cease to become good parenting. You don't beat your kids anymore to make them good. So security starts, welfare starts, funding for handicaps starts, etc. And you see that, and I learned this from you too, Sherry, that in Europe their electricity is tuned to a blue, which is a very nurturing color, and they're socialistic mostly. You know, everybody's cared for. Anyway, the final exam for blue would be World War II, where you have someone like Hitler that I can't imagine anybody in the right mind really going for any of that stuff, but they were afraid, and they enabled him because they couldn't stop the big bully. And we did recover from that. And then you see the hippie children, the flower children, you know, people not taking country rhetoric for the first time by protesting the Vietnam War, the German wall falls. So it's now a time of violet. Violet meaning purification, transmutation. Along with the final exam here would be earth issues, because the earth would be transmuting, letting go of crap. Our countries would be exposed, having to deal with their crap. And individually, we would also. And during the age of violet, according to the ancient people, which we're doing right now, we're in the throes of our exam, the final exam, the downside, what we have to be more powerful than would be terrorism, government trying to control data, health, medicines, money, people. Our freedom is being threatened to be taken from us. And the ancient people would say, test time. You need to stand up. And then here's another thought. It's just something to aid in that. And I'm just going to talk on a personal level. I spent a lot of my life being a blue, kind of a nurturer, and a great pushover, classic blue. And one of the things I noted was that the energy in my solar plexus chakra was always low, which holds confidence. And, you know, I always knew about the chakras, but I didn't understand them in this way. Like if my heart chakra is closed and you offer me love, chances are I'm not going to respond real well. It's like I'm trying to paint with that energy and I don't have it available to me. So one of the things for standing up and the countrywide, standing up and ensuring our own personal freedom might be to do something like my Cosmic Stream CD, where it's like chakras on steroids or some other method to get in there and empower all of your tools, make sure they're all functioning, because it's time for us to stand up and be all that we are. don't
know. So was this thing that was referred to for a long time, and it was back in the hippie period in the 70s, 80s, when the Age of Aquarius, I forget when that song was first out, but is that really the beginning now that is that, I forget when it astrologically actually kicked in, but it was more recent than we think. Is the Age of Aquarius really the time of the violet?
No. We are moving into the Age of Aquarius. There's like a transition process. When the song came out, it was like the beginning of the process. And my understanding is that we'll probably be fully rooted in that energy in about 2030 with some more purging to go before we get there, meaning the cleansing of negative energy, the exposing of government horrible manipulation. And when that finalizes, my belief is that we'll never go back to learning red again. We're going to learn pink, which is a combination of white light and red, and then like the lessons associated with tangerine, and then, you know, lemon yellow and lime green, the pastels. Because when you look at the auras, I guess I'm really lucky, but when you look at the auras of really big celestial beings, they're often clear and they have like this rainbow iridescence in them. So they're radiating white light, clear, silver, and then splashes of all the colors. And right now, if you take our aura photo, you see, oh, this person's got a lot of purple. Well, this person's got a lot of green and maybe a little spot of blue. But we're going to transmute to the energy that accesses more information, more dimensions, more subtle energy, et cetera, et cetera. And just giving you another little example, just one of the ways that I believe, that the ancient people understood subtle energy, dark matter or quantum energy, I wouldn't know what, but again, it was in Egypt. They had this musical scale to tune you with the changing astrology, like your keynotes, every hour of the day. So whatever frequencies came in, they were somehow aware of, and their music balanced them. And then they had another scale. It was called your ka body. Your ka body is supposedly your exact opposite energy body. And my girlfriend does cranial sacrum. We often play with that. And I found sometimes the root cause of an illness or something is it's in your ka body, or it's in your quantum entangled matter. I'm just using different words. It's in spooky action at a distance. I think that was Einstein's words. But they have now done science, and they can replicate that you have this opposite, exact opposite energy, and whatever affects that affects you. And they can repeat the experiment, and it works. They can prove it. And that's what they were doing in ancient Egypt. They were aware of quantum action at a distance and about the interplays, and they were tuning and balancing both sets of sounds on the quantum level and on the physical level for greater harmony, health, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, wow.
I never thought of
superstition as perhaps quantum energy. I just didn't until I began to put it all together.
I'm getting an aha here. Jill, you've taken our classes. This is what we do with providing analog sound back to somebody to entrain their brain. And what you're saying is it's releasing this innate music that is really a frequency that is really math. Let's go back to the beginning. You're talking about cosmic energy. Let's go back to us as a cosmic being. Our DNA, from what I understand, is set to music. Can you comment on that? And then is all of our music based on the movements of the planets and those math relationships?
Well, certainly a whole lot more than we ever imagined is based on the planets, and also get into the DNA, which of course is vibrational energy, hence influenced by vibrations. But let's do the planets first. At least I can't speak factually. I'm not a scientist, but I will speak from the perspective of almost all of the ancient cultures I've read about. They all believed in the significant influence of the vibrations of the planet, which you get the keynote. So we all know that's not woo-woo stuff. There are movements within the planets, and they come in as waves below our hearing range. You can interpret them and see the effect on matter, emotions, thoughts, feelings. So ancient man would do musical astrology, which was astrology at its roots, which was when you have a difficult astrological energy coming in, like you were doing. You say, oh, everybody's going to be tired, you know, your magnesium's going to be stressed. It made me think, oh, I'll take an extra magnesium tablet. They were blessing people like you with sounds. And that was a part of the initial idea. And then the other thing was that they would get the frequency of a planet in its motion, which is a little different than the astrology reading of the day, because the planets are moving different relative to Earth. But they got the, like, original tone of a planet in orbit, which I have in my Stardust CD. And then they would have heavenly music. They would tune and harmonize to that. And the idea was there was severalfold. One was to kind of be in tune with the stars, so when your challenge came in, you were very apt to easily win. And then the second thought was that they believed that as much as Gaia or a soul inhabits Earth, that a soul inhabits Mars, Venus, the sun. So when they were calling the sun a god, they were saying a god, some type of god like Gaia, inhabits the body of the sun. And by having the original fundamental frequency of the sun, you resonated with them, downloading your energy, elevating yourself. And I put that all in my Stardust CD. And if you do Carillion photography before and after, you see just listening to those tonal patterns puts light in your aura. You know, it's an ancient way saying that some of these subtle low electromagnetic energies are vastly more influential than we can conceive. So that would be that answer. And then to shift to DNA, just going back to ancient readings here, they talk about in Atlantis, etc., having, and this would be some stuff coming from Central America and channelings would be my source here, that we had all 12 strands of our DNA active, which means like in an antenna, radio antenna, the bigger it is, the more channels you get. So we had access, more clairvoyance, clairaudience, available. We had more frequencies to interpret, enjoy, give us more a vaster viewpoint. And as we started to devolve, and this is again right in my book, as each culture, we listened to the different music, and as we kind of got trapped in matter, then with when you're not in love, when or you have hateful emotions, you can look in a laboratory and see your DNA just shrivel up. And I know some people, many people have said that the frequency 528 in the solfeggios, which is my paint, your soul CD, but at any rate, that particular frequency helps the DNA unfold. Again, with your DNA unfolding, if I give a better antenna, which means more everything. And so the ancient people would enjoy telepathy, levitation, all kinds of stuff. But they also had 12 strands of DNA. And would that be linked to music and sound? Well, of course, because all waves interact, and through resonance, energy transfers. I don't know if that helps. That's just what I would say ancient man would say.
I think we're stunned here. Is music math?
Yes. It's math in terms of counting the cycles per second. Yes, it's math in terms of counting the energy in different harmonics, which is an after ripple of sound. Like you're in a church, you hear a sound go boing, and it seems to go up in pitch in the echo, according to a mathematical formula. And different after ripples create different healings. And then music is mass. Well, in terms of rhythm, the ancient Hindu stuff, their stuff features unbelievable healing. It's in their drums, and it's absolutely complex. It's beautiful. And think of the Tibetan bowls. You know, the Tibetan monks want 7 metals in their bowls. Again, this idea coming from Atlantis that each metal has a different harmonic pattern. The numbers are the same, but the amount of energy in each harmonic pattern vary. And so each one has a different healing element. So you would heal by listening to, you know, a brass instrument might heal you over a gold instrument, or vice versa, depending on what you needed. And so there was this idea that in this way, these sets of numbers could be calculated to your numbers and used for balance. And again, this goes into most mystery schools, like Pythagoras said, all is number. And if you go back to the ancient Sumerians, they worshipped gods who were numbers, fractions. So did the Egyptians. They would relate and correlate their gods to numbers. So it was like the primal universal language is math, numbers. And they would say that if you're a painter and you have all your paints out on your palette, you would have the rainbow colors. So they would say your palette of numbers would be 1 to 9. 1 would be associated with a single person, a single son, etc. 2 with a couple. 3 with a trinity, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. Sherry, Father, Son. You know, it could be mother, father, child, and so forth. So they'd go up the numbers, and this was the high use of math as energy. And so they would not only look at all the number patterns, but they would correlate it to how the number felt and the energy within a number. So they would say a star like Venus makes a 5-pointed star in her transit throughout the sky over 8 years. So they would associate 5 with Venus. Then they would feel, because they would have great psychic skills, the energy of looking at Venus, and then feel the energy of a 5-pointed flower. And through resonance, they would believe that that was somewhat similar energy. And that's what hermetic magic is. That's what the pagan spell stuff is. Because the pagan spell stuff is the druid stuff coming from their own mystery schools and also from the hermetic magic. It's using the subtle feeling, the subtle energy, quantum energy, associated entangled energy with things as like they were ingredients in a recipe. It's an entirely different way of looking at healing. Not discounting other ways of looking at healing, but it was the ancient way of looking at healing.
And it's so, I was just thinking it was like recipes when you said that. That's a little spooky. Thank you. So they had all of these amazing tools back to, you know, Mickey is a sorcerer, that you would learn these amazing things and then you would put them together as a recipe because you wanted an end result of something.
Yes.
But they might have it as a, they might have in their quiver all these sounds that they had learned or been taught.
Yes.
Or had passed on.
Yes. Yes.
And then they would pull from that quiver a recipe of like, oh, some of this and some of that. Like I would think of it as an herbalist a certain way. And these people
yes.
had the skill set to be able to think about it acoustically. So they'd not only think about
yes.
the masters or the true alchemists, might think of it then as a recipe, and then to enhance that recipe, they'd suggest that you go into a particular shape of room to take benefit
mm-hmm.
of the shape form of
yep.
that acoustic being in that room to then enhance that action. Is that all true?
Matching color? Yes, it's all true. Matching colors, matching food colors, matching thoughts, to really get a powerful dosage to change matter. I have a couple recipes on ancient-music.com, a new website. And, you know, if people are interested in my new book, The Lost Ways of Time, that's available on ancient-music.com. And the other tools that I talked about, the ancient methods of sound healing, they're at jillswingsoflight.com.
We've been looking at both of those as you've been talking. I've been bouncing back and forth. There's several questions I have. In each of the sections, like ancient Indian music, there is a written piece, a tiny, tiny piece, and then music. So have you written a piece of music for each of these ancient kinds of music?
No, it's more some of their, just a sampling, a smattering of their techniques. Like, for example, they would, Again, they were very connected. They believed their fate and relied heavily on the vibrations from the movement of the planets. And as I said, the numbering system of music was included harmonics, which is an after ripple of a sound. So like a trumpet and a violin play C, but the violin of the C, same musical pitch on the violin, is going to sound higher, like A, E. E sounds higher, although the pitch was the same, because there's more energy in a higher harmonic. So they would also use vowel sounds for their harmonic capacities. So they had, and this is all through the globe, they would play with the different orders of possible vowel sounds for empowerment and enlightenment. And that was called the ancient planetary song. And I have the pattern. And they wouldn't put it all out, but I know how they picked the pattern. So I went in and put in the beats and the accents. And I have, like, the ancient planetary hymn for the Egyptians. And they would sing that to the dead body of the pharaoh for him to cross over to the highest dimension upon death, because he was supposed to come back and then take care of Egypt. And again, yes, Richard, common man was not allowed to use those tones, just the pharaoh.
Hmm. We're looking
or
at
maybe a priest that cheated.
We're looking at your store, mm-hmm. and I know that most of the music that you do is for a purpose, like the ones on Bach Flower Remedies. So we're looking at your different covers, I guess you call it, that you've done. You've done all this painting, plus create the music. So if people really wanted to elevate themselves by sound, what would you suggest?
You think of it this way. We're all a building like a skyscraper, each one of us, and we need to fill up with light. Like the paint your soul in the stardust, think of taking the roof off and celestial energy comes down. The healing by emotions, the flower remedies, it will take out your negative emotional crop and build in virtue. Think of that maybe as light coming in from the side. Deep weight body and body healing, think of it as light coming up from the ground. It all heals, and the chakra is the same. It all heals. It just has like a different entry point, a different level, pitch, a different, you understand this, Sherry. I'm just trying to talk clearly. You can heal from different levels. And think of it this way. You know, you could meditate forever and try to get a personality change, or you could listen to sound while you're doing the dishes, while you're sleeping, while you're doing your daily activities and concentrating on something else, and you're absorbing what you need. An incredible, cost-effective, powerful healing modality is sound, and we've lost it until now. We're getting it back. We're back.
Your book is bringing it all back. I see that your book is on sale now. Did you do that just for our audience?
Pretty close. I'm picking it up from the printers at November 11th. Yahoo! I'm so excited. And then I'm going to mail them out. I'm so excited.
They can go to your site, ancientmiddle-music.com, or could they look just at your name, Jill? M-A-T-T-S-O-N?
I don't know if that works. I think it does. I think I bought that URL, but I can't remember.
The other is your books. You've written several books. I want to make this comment and an apology before we have to go. Jill wrote a book about me. And I was embarrassed by the book because, oh, here, buy this book about me. You know, I felt very egotistical. And then I began to read some of Jill's stuff in Lost Waves of Time and about deserving and where this comes from. I'm very, very honored that she would write a book about me. And now I'm out here with, this book is so special. This is about a new way, a new future of medicine. And now not only has Jill put that out there and we provide this to all of our students, but now she has brought the past through to show that what we are doing is from the past. And all I'm doing is just remembering it and trying to deliver it in a way that us lazy humans now can deal with it. Because it used to be, it'd take them years to calculate a movement of the planet. And now we just, you know, type something on the computer and there it is in front of us. So we have lost our patience. Jill, do you ever help people find their patience or find their direction?
Well, patience, yes, a couple things. Patience, is there's a patience flower and the patience frequency on one of the flower remedies. But one of the things I learned from Atlantis that I thought was beautiful was that they believed that when people incarnate, they would encapsulate the soul path, and that they would encapsulate it in sound. Because sound, is think of it like a little computer, it has all these different attributes. As we talked about, pitch, rhythm, harmonics, etc. And so that when you selected your birth name, which you would do on the other side and kind of implant into your parents' brains, it's kind of like a thumbprint. This is your life path. And part of good parenting in the better years of Atlantis would be to always say your child's name with love. Regardless of what they did, you would never, ever yell at your children, you know, like Barbara Ann. You know, I had a girlfriend who called Barbara Ann, and she wouldn't let anybody call her Barbara because that was the name, that was the way her parents said it. She got called Barbara when she was in trouble and when they were, like, sending their anger and poison through their voice unknowingly. And if you keep ingesting that, like if your name is always said, you know, in a negative tone, you clog your thumbprint. So one of the ancient ways to heal that, when, and you find this in African tribes, when they're trying to rehabilitate someone who has done something awful, they sing to them. They sing their blueprint. They sing their pure name with love. And so I know when I was young, I was very insecure, and I, you know, someone would say my name, or even I said myself, it would be Jill, like a question mark. And it was hard for me at first to even hear my name with love, because I had to learn to love me. And so there's just one ancient way of starting to get clear on your vibratory path, which is to clear your skeleton signature thought to help you remember your path, and it would always be on a subconscious level. But anyway.
Jill, when you read your book and anything you've written, you can always feel that you've written it with love and caring about your reader.
Thank you. Thank you. And likewise, Sherry, here you are championing and taking on all of these problems, all these government people, standing up, being the violet leader that you are, and saying, nobody's taken her freedom from us. Wow. Hats off to you, and to you too, Richard.
Thank you.
Well, you both deserve it so much. Thank you.
I have a question from the audience, and then I have a follow-up question. The question is about the color brown. What music is that? And actually, this leads to I suspect this is the same person asked earlier about, you know, what about the browns, beiges, grays, and blacks? What scale do they belong to?
In antiquity, in our dimension only, meaning third dimension, that we are live in a world of duality. And originally, when you read the lore and stories, there is no such thing as good and evil. It's simply like the positive and negative sides of a battery. It's opposite charges. And each frequency, and again, this is ancient belief from many, many cultures, each frequency, like let's say, like I did earlier, my story with Donna Eden, the musical note F, green, meaning abundance and lack, violet, transformation, someone trying to take your freedom away. Each particular pitch would have a positive and negative value. So when as an artist, when you want to get black and you're using pigments, you simply mix them all together. In a way, black is the polar, and I'm not saying good and evil, I'm saying more like positive and negative sides of a battery. Black is the polar opposite of white. So whether or not you sign it as to positive and negative charge, or you want to amp that up into good and evil charge, is up to you. But as far as mixing lights, you mix them all together, you get white light. Mixing paints, you mix them all together, you get black. And to get brown, you would mix some red and some blue. You'd mix different colors. So to get that in sound, it would be a little mixture of tones, kind of a nice, rich mixture, probably making you feel like you do if you were to go out and sit and put your feet in the dirt. And whether that has a positive or negative pull, in my opinion, ancient man's opinion, would really be upon you, whether or not you wish to associate that with, you know, you could, I mean, it's going to have a positive, negative pole, but is it good or evil? Only if we make it so.
Like 50% of red and 50% of yellow might give us a brown?
Yeah, something like that in the different tones. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Before we let you go, because I can see, I knew this was going to go fast, as always, but I want to ask, would you demonstrate how to say be well, in the sense of the context is I've had an aha that there's so much effect behind intonation.
Yeah.
So that when the ancients said be well, they weren't kidding. If you know what
oh,
I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, they really meant
they
it. They didn't mean
you. Their
they
miracle
meant it as
was
a,
their voice.
Right, they really meant it as an intentional, whether you were here or action at a distance, be well really meant, damn it.
Right.
Yeah, so could you demonstrate that?
Well, I will, but I want to tell you that there's two ancient practices on that. The first one would be, think of your chakras. So let's say I'm talking to someone who just feels terrible about themselves. Maybe I put my hand on my solar plexus, my confidence chakra, yellow, and I focus on it. I feel it. I think it. And I intend well for that other person. And then I would speak out of my solar plexus chakra and notice how much respect there is in this voice. Or let's say the person had a heartache. They lost their loved one. Now I'm going to focus on, perhaps touch, feel, my heart chakra, and I'm going to say a different tone of voice that lets them know, regardless of what silly words come out, that I care about them. That would be one way. And then another way was they would divide all energy palette of the emotions or feelings, and they would just categorize them, put them on names. It could be Frank, Bob, Sam, whatever, but they would use the elements like earth, fire, air, water, thinking these are all God's tools. And so let's say you were fiery, you were losing your temper, and you were out of control. So as you're screaming and yelling, I'm going to put water in my voice, and it's very soothing. And if I talk like this long enough and look at you, you will be starting to pick up this kind of watery voice. And as we all know, water puts out fire. I mean, there's two methods, and there's more. of having the miracle healing coming from the conscious use of your voice. It's sound, it's feeling, it's thought all in one.
And for those of you who were just asking the question about browns and blacks, I went to my paint and I put in 50% red, 50% green, and 50% blue, and it came out black. So we ended up with a C and an F sharp and a G together.
Mm-hmm.
To answer the question about music.
Whoa. And because I know we're really rolling up on time, how do people, where would you like people to go to get more information about you, contact you, find out about workshops, et cetera, and
I have a half hour of free sound healing music at jillswingsoflight.com. And it comes with a newsletter every three weeks, I think, on how to heal with sound. And there are tons of sound healing tools. Very, very accessible, powerful, powerful tools. Enough to change the world if we just sing. And ancient/music.com is really a fun spot for the lost ways of time. It's the only site I have at the moment that sells lost ways of time. I just haven't gotten it up on my other site yet. And my email and all that stuff is there. My calendar is at Jill's Wings of Light. And just let me tell you a story. When I was, younger, I was in Estonia. And it's a Latvian country, and I met this lady, Mara. And Mara told me that her grandparents had been slaves under the Tsars. And she told me how disempowered they are because they were treated so terribly, how broken, how they had no energy, no gumption, nothing. And when the Tsars fell, they were unable to claim their freedom. They couldn't even stand up and speak for themselves. And they took an ancient tradition from all the globes did this. They would have huge orchestras, 10,000 people in an orchestra. So anyway, in Estonia, half of their country, a million people in the country, half a million people showed up for a whole week, 24/7, and sang. And within weeks, they had their freedom. And then during World War II, when Germany took Poland, blows me. We Westerners said, okay, we'll balance the power and we'll let Russia take all these other countries. God, that blows my mind. But anyway, that's what happened. And she said that under the Russian rule, to keep them in line, they had like a lottery. And they would draw names out of the hat and show up in the middle of the night and drag these people from their homes and off to death camp or Siberia. So there was random killings. Then during World War II, Germany got part of their country and Russia had the other, and they had to fight each other, so you had fathers killing sons. And once again, when Germany fell, they were unable to claim their freedom. They couldn't do it. They were done. And this ancient tradition, which, by the way, would have still been in their memory because the Inquisition from the Catholic Church wiped out the Druid practices, and the Druids carefully used choirs in different locations with different pitches to maintain harmony and balance. So this is in the memory of the people of Estonia. And they get together and they sing for 5 days, and they get their freedom. We think of sound just a little piddly thing. This is a huge power, and we can use it to change the world.
Do you lead workshops for us to do that?
Excuse me?
Do you lead workshops to help us do that?
Sure, sure. I would love to do that, yes.
So if people want to speak to their community?
Yeah, maybe sometime you and I could work together and we could go to different spots because they would use the ancient ley lines or the energy channels. So that's where your pyramids are built, where your sacred sites are. And they would map the world out, and they would do this mass singing, the harmonizing for the land and the country, And we would, of course, today incorporate with their electric frequency and counterbalance all the cell phones. And so anyway, but they would pick these locations, and then they would look for underground waterways, too, because the vibration would carry into the earth and into the waterways, and then they'd bless the people through the drinking water and through the subtle energy current. So it's like they would create like a fence lattice over the earth, and they'd sing it up. And how beautiful. I mean, wouldn't you like rather send your children to, like, music camp than war?
Yes, and I think like yours and music like yours is going to lead the way to a composition of all that's good and leave all that negative crap behind. I hope that we humans have that in us.
Yeah, and here's another thing. If you grasp the frequencies as they go up exponentially. And here's a good way to explain this. If you go from 1 cycle second to 2 cycle seconds, as you know, Sherry, that makes an octave. Same musical note, C, C, but there's 1 cycle per second different. To make an octave, you simply double the cycles per second. So let's say you have 1,000 cycles per second, and now you're going up the next octave. You go up the next octave, and you get 2,000, but there's a 1,000 cycle per second difference. So when people with love in their heart, which is a very high frequency, with good intention, get together and start to sing, we're starting to go up exponentially. And we might think, oh yeah, just a bunch of us singing. Uh-uh. Not with high vibrations like that. It goes up exponentially. It gets to be a very significant power and strength. And likewise, of course, your hateful, ugly emotions will go down in pitch. They won't have the same intensity with as few people.
Well, it's like a moto with sounds and beaming energy at a word on a jar, and the water inside the jar became ugly and something you didn't want to look at.
Yeah.
We are out of time. We've put up contact information for Jill. She is in Oil City, Pennsylvania. Her cell, that's awesome that you have your cell number up on your site for people to purchase this new book. How many in the first run? Is there like 1,000 copies available?
I think I got 2,000.
That'll go quick. We want some of them. I want to put in an order. How big is the book? Is it still 600 pages?
No. I worked really hard on, because I was afraid people wouldn't read it. So I worked hard on making it as simple as possible and as many grounding pins as possible, because people will blow off ancient man's thinking. So it is peppered with astrology, history, science, anthropology, etc., and it builds a very solid foundation for the evolution of subtle energy. You know, we've got Darwin with the evolution of matter, but this is the evolution of quantum energy or dark matter, which also changes all energy does. And that this vibratory path is very powerful, and we can use it to our benefit. And then there's follow-up books, but I was afraid to get it too big, lest people wouldn't read it.
There is a magic in Jill's books. When I first read what she first put out, she's writing from some ancient place in her soul. And if you really listen with the intention of being open, it takes you to that place. It's absolutely
magic. Or maybe you remember.
Mm-hmm. It's magic. Jill, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Bless you all.
I think we should have just a study group of all of this. And I have the hiccups. So, Richard, can you close out while I take a big drink?
Sure. we need to have a whole other show just about shape form and the ancients and the Egyptians and what they knew about shape form. I'll just leave that as a cliffhanger. I knew it was going to be a blast. It was. Great, Jill, as always, having you. I'm so happy this book is out, and I know, knowing you, that probably means you're already starting on another one. Of course. It's amazing. You and Jay Rawlings. Amazingly productive. So this was really wonderful, and I suggest that everybody re-listening to this, because as always, Jill just rattles these things off like, you know, just a casual thought. Oh, it's mind-boggling. Just really stupendous. So thank you so much, Jill, and everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and good luck with this daylight saving times, restabilizing. Wow. Always an adventure. So everybody have a great week, and we'll see you guys on Tuesday. Thanks again, Jill.
Thank you.
We're going to be taught by software on Tuesday, too, so please join us.
Oh, great. Okay. Thanks everybody.
You.